In this way, the living entity gets a suitable body with a material mind and senses according to his fruitive activities. When the reaction of his particular activity comes to an end, that end is called death, and when a particular type of reaction begins, that beginning is called birth. Purport. From time immemorial, the living entity travels in the different species of life and the different planets almost perpetually. This process is explained in Bhagavad Gita. Brahmayan sarvabhutani yantrarudhani mayaya. Under the spell of Maya, everyone is wandering throughout the universe on the carriage of the body offered by the material energy. Materialistic life involves a series of actions and reactions. It is a long film spool of actions and reactions, and one lifespan is just a flash in such a reactionary show. When a child is born, it is to be understood that his particular type of body is the beginning of another set of activities. And when an old man dies, it is to be understood that one set of reactionary activities is finished. We can see that because of different reactionary activities, one man is born in a rich family and another is born in a poor family, although both of them are born in the same place at the same moment and in the same atmosphere. One who is carrying pious activity with him is given a chance to take his birth in a rich or pious family, and one who is carrying impious activity is given a chance to take birth in a lower, poor family. The change of body means a change to a different field of activities. Similarly, when the body of the boy changes into that of a youth, the boyish activities change into youthful activities. It is clear that a particular body is given to the living entity for a particular type of activity. This process is going on perpetually from a time which is impossible to trace out. Vaishnav poets say, therefore, anadi karma phale, which means that these actions and reactions of one's activity cannot be traced, for they may even continue from the last millennium of Brahma's birth to the next millennium. We have seen the example in the life of Narad Muni. In one millennium he was the son of a maidservant, and in the next millennium he became a great sage. This is a scientific, dispassionate analysis of birth and death. Just explaining the essential facts. Of course, when there's birth and death, it's generally a lot of emotions involved also. Joy when someone is born, or lamentation when someone dies, or sometimes joy when someone dies also. It's also the. I saw in Gaurya Patrika, which was of the Devananda Gaurya Math, at that time in the list of the editors was Abhay Charan Aravinda Das. So it was on one page there was what was the word used? Tirobhav Prastham Prayan was the word used. One devotee had passed away. On the next page there was the word was used Mrityu, death, and it was describing the passing away of someone who they described as a great demon, and it was with great joy we announced that he has died, because they were at philosophical odds with each other. He was a godbrother who was made some different kind of propaganda. So they announced like that, it's with great pleasure that we announce that this person has died. Really heavy. Prabhupada was on the editorial board. At least his name was there. So, anyway, the point we're making, yeah, well, that's a good example, actually, how death and birth are emotional occasions, as is being expressed. Is this a death or a birth? You can tell from the music, the songs. You try not to listen to them. It's a marriage or a maturation ceremony, something like that. Someone passed an exam, do they do it for that also? They don't do exams, these people. They just get drunk, that's all. when there's a marriage or a birth, they get drunk, and then, I presume. And when there isn't a marriage or birth, they also get drunk. But here it's being analyzed in a clinical, scientific way. What is birth? The beginning of a particular set of reactions. And death means this set of reactions is over, now you go to another set of reactions. It reminds me of one book. It was very famous when I was young. A book I read called Desmond Morris, who was a zoologist. You know that book, The Naked Ape? They translated that. The Naked Ape. Which kind of ape is that? It's a human being. It means he doesn't have hair all over his body, like mostly they don't. Bhaktivinoda Thakur did. He was called, that's tangential point. Balava Baba. They used to call him because his body was very hairy. But generally, the human being, they don't have so much hair like apes. So he wrote a book describing human beings just like they're another animal, just like you described this kind of ape, what kind of habitat it lives in, what are their eating habits, what are their mating habits. And then all this, so it just described it in completely zoological terms. And then he wrote another book after that called The Human Zoo, in which it's similarly describing the anthro-sociology of human society in biological terms. So no emotion, just like the talking about mating, that's also very emotional. Generally, it involves emotions. It's described in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam. Pingala, the prostitute. Prostitute, they don't have feelings for their customers, but she had some romantic feeling. She had some feeling that maybe these men, they like me, actually. So, mating also involves affection, but he analyzed in a way saying, yeah, they express this way, that way. He won't say they feel affection, but they touch each other in such a way to, and that he just analyzes it like this. So this is an analysis. Of course, in the previous verses it's been described that this is a cause of great suffering. But what is it actually? It's simply that one set of reactions is finished, that's death, and we go on to another set of reactions. Therefore, dhiras tatrana muhyati. Seeing this, one who is steady is not disturbed. Dhira. Srila Prabhupada would often quote this word dhira, dhiras tatra namohyati. He would often quote the example of Lord Shiva, who in school, in Sanskrit class, Srila Prabhupada, in college, Scottish Churches College, they were studying Kalidasa's Kumara Sambha, which means the birth of Kumara, and everyone in Tamil Nadu knows who Kumara is. I suppose. Maybe the Christians and Muslims don't know, but Kumar means Murugan, Kartikeya. So that was describing how Parvati, being sent by the demigods, was attempting to seduce Lord Shiva. And she even touched his genital as he was sitting naked in meditation, but he was not disturbed. So this is example, Prabhupada said, this is the example of dhira, one who is not disturbed, even when there is grounds for disturbance. In Bhagavatam and in Manu Samhita, it is warned that one should not sit next to one's mother, sister, or daughter. What's that? Mata duhitra svasracha navivikta sanobhavet balavan indriya gramo vidvansam apikarshati. That even if one sits next to one's mother, sister, or daughter, that it's not expected that one would be disturbed in mind, but the warning is there. Even a learned person can be disturbed. Even one who knows philosophically, this is not correct. There's no meaning to it. It's just two bodies. But, and especially being the body of a close relative. But even knowing, even one knows that power of Maya is so strong that one may be attracted. Therefore, one should not sit close even to one's mother, sister, or daughter. So it's a shocking exposition of the power of Maya. But one who is dhira, he is not disturbed. He's not disturbed by sensory provocations. And then he's not disturbed by death. He understands. Well, it's time for me to go. Or someone else has gone. Because he sees from the understanding of Shastra. One who sees with the eye of eternity. What is this life anyway? It's everything here is temporary. People are so disturbed about war in the last 20 years of the 20th century. Pretty much everyone in Europe and America was convinced there's going to be a major war between the communist world and the non-communist world, and that would be like the end, Armageddon, the end of those who are Christian. You know this term? It's a biblical term from the book of Revelation. You Poles, they must be knowing it. Armageddon, that's the term. It's described in this funny book called the Book of Revelations, how there'll be a great war and killing at the end, and then Jesus will come and throw everyone into hell except about two or three people, and that's it. So I was just seeing yesterday Satsuru Maharaj, who is something from Back to Godhead, at the time when on some book he was writing, at the time when he was writing Prabhupada Lilamrita, and he said, well, I don't know if there'll be anyone to read it, because they were so convinced that there's going to be a huge war and then it'll all be over, there won't be, well, what are we doing? What are we acting for? There's going to be a big war, so why are we bothering to do anything? Well, it didn't happen, but it may happen, it will happen. And anyway, everyone has to die sooner or later. So we're afraid there'll be big wars, but actually the history, as I was just also reading Prabhupada said in one lecture, the history of, what is the history of human society? There's people build things up, they become very powerful, then someone comes and smashes them. And then someone else becomes very big. And then they get smashed. This is the history of human society. Now Iraq is invaded by the Americans. Whoops, I didn't mean to say, not invaded, they came to help them, right? But that Iraq, that was the center of the greatest empire in the world. Babylon. At one time, Constantinople, which was modern-day Istanbul, that was for many, many years, that was the most powerful city in civilization. Of course, India and China are not included in civilization, but history doesn't touch that part of the world. But now, you know, Turkey, that country, Turkey? Who cares about Turkey? It's just a nothing country, but it was very powerful. Carthage was a great kingdom in North Africa. I don't even know if there's any city there now. It's part of Tripoli or Libya. Just to the country, it's just nothing. It's that Libya in the, what was it, 1980s? This Gaddafi was calling America bad names and all that. Then Ronald Reagan sent in a couple of ships and bombed them once, and then they shut up. He was always making so much noise, and then he just became absolutely quiet. Just with a few bombs, that's all. One time, a few bombs. So that's it. There's such a powerful country, and these now nothing. It's like Prabhupada said about Britain. He came there and he was expecting such a powerful country. He just saw at that time when Prabhupada came to Britain, the economic, it was down. Actually, it was, even when they had their empire, there was so many unemployed people. They were just holding on to their empire. And then this TV show, there's this TV host, his job is to call people onto TV and make them look like fools. They have that in modern Indian TV. They bring them on and they ask them questions and they try to make them look like fools. So he asked the first question, Swami, do you believe in hell? Because they think believing in hell is just something completely stupid. And if you believe in hell, you're stupid. So Prabhupada said, yes, London is hell. And this man, he's used to giving one question after another. Boom, 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 boom. That's his job. He was just completely, he couldn't say anything. He didn't know what to say because he was thinking, you know, this is some Swami from poor India and I'm gonna really make him look like a fool, and I'm from Britain, which is such a great country. And Prabhupada just, he left him with nothing to say. Prabhupada went on saying, well, you know, it's always raining and cold here. You never see the sunlight. And then just to make him feel a little bit nice, he said, but it's to your credit that you made such a great civilization in such a terrible place. Late Night Lineup is the name of the program. That started at 10 o'clock. That was late night in those days. Now late night would have to start at 1 o'clock or something, or 2 o'clock. 10 o'clock is not late anymore. It used to be. 10 o'clock was late in India, wasn't it, previously? 10 o'clock, you go in any city except maybe Bombay, and everything was closed down. Not 10 o'clock, 6 o'clock. Yeah. As soon as it was dark, everything would close up. Now electricity and everything goes on. All day, all night. Rakshasa civilization. So, birth and death. One who sees with the eye of eternity sees this. This is going on. It's going on. I don't belong here. I have no actual identification with everything which people identify me by. I'm not the son of so-and-so. I'm not the father of someone else. This role we play, but it's temporary and therefore not meaningful. So this should be taught to children. At the same time, you're asking about affection in the family. So certainly that affection will be there, as Prabhupada explained about Arjuna with Abhimanyu. Arjuna was self-realized. He studied Bhagavad Gita directly from Krishna. He heard. But then when Abhimanyu died, he was so upset. So someone challenged Prabhupada about that. Then what is that? He's supposed to be... He just heard Bhagavad Gita, he's supposed to be detached. And he became so upset when Abhimanyu died that he vowed that tomorrow before the sun sets, I'll kill Jayadratha. Either I'll kill Jayadratha or I'll kill myself, one or the other. He became so mad to kill Jayadratha because Jayadratha had... He didn't actually kill Abhimanyu, but he was instrumental in stopping any help coming to him. So someone challenged Prabhupada that why, isn't that ridiculous? That Arjuna, he's supposed to be the first student of Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada said, no, that's natural that you have affection but for your child. But that he was self-realized is seen that he didn't give up his duty. And this feeling is there of affection. But... He went on with his duty of serving Krishna as Krishna wanted him. We reread also in Bhagavad Gita that Matra Sparshas Dukantaya Shitoshna Sukha Dukha Daha Agama Paino Nidhyas Tangsa Chikshas Bharata. In heat and cold, happiness and distress, these various situations are there. One should tolerate them. It doesn't mean that you don't feel the heat or the cold. It doesn't mean that a self-realized person, he's just permanently air-conditioned because he doesn't feel the heat. You feel it also. So, yeah, it's not, it's, there's nothing wrong in a sadhu wearing warm cloth in the winter, because you might die without that. Although I've seen in North India this season, if you go, you'll see the sun. They don't. They'll sleep outside with just one blanket. It's impossible how they can do that, but they do. So many of them, not just one or two. So they are some great tolerance of the elements is there. But the point is that you feel it, but you tolerate it. You don't become disturbed by it. So like that, the family members, the affection is there, but at the same time one understands that this is not permanent, and the affection is this relationship of son to father, father to son, brother to sister. It's there, but it's not permanent, this bodily relationship, but the affection is expressed by helping each other in Krishna consciousness. Parents should preach to their children and tell them, actually, the little son, you can tell, 5 years old, actually, you're not my son. Everything in this world is temporary. We don't belong here. I'm your father for a few days. And you may be father of someone else for a few days. But ultimately we are all part and parcel of Krishna. So in this way, if the instruction is there, then they can be detached from material life. Otherwise, I see many parents of devotees, they'll engage their children in Krishna conscious activities, offering arati, drawing pictures of Krishna, or putting tilak on them, but they don't actually preach to them. So they don't really understand, they don't get the idea of the philosophy. It's like it's a kind of family thing that they do, cultural thing that they do, but why they do it, they don't know. That's how the sampradayas broke down. That Rasaraj Prabhu was explained to me, Iyengar, Sri Vaishnav family. In their family, they followed all the activities. They'd offered food to the picture in their home of Ranganathan, and they'd go to the temples, and they followed all the activities. We had no idea why. And when he came to America, he got one of Prabhupada's books, and he read in there the philosophy of karma, and he never knew what it was before. He had no idea, because they didn't teach him at home. He went to school and became a software engineer or something like that. In those days, before there were hundreds of thousands of Indians in America. So, he didn't know. He didn't know what the laws of karma were. He didn't know about that. Maybe in the present generation of Indians there's more idea, because there's more religious feeling in India now than there was one generation ago. It was really bad before Prabhupada's movement had some effect. It was really very atheistic atmosphere in many ways. There were no temples were being built. The temples were all broken down. And many people, young people, they thought this religion, it's a Hindu, it's all rubbish, and like that. So there was no instruction, and therefore these sampradayas have broken down to a large extent. Madhva sampradaya, Sri Vaishnav sampradaya. Maybe there's some feeling, but there's no proper instruction. That's why we find so many people, Sri Vaishnav sampradaya, their families have been worshipping Ranganathan or Srinivasan Tirupati Balaji for generations, and now they're worshipping some Sai Baba or so-called Kalki avatar. Very sorry to see, due to lack of proper knowledge. So this knowledge is to be instructed regularly. Otherwise, we are all the time getting information from the world of Maya all the time, from outside and inside. From outside there are so many sensory provocations. Just, I don't know what this song is, something, I don't know, I love you, you love me, or some Maya, whatever it is. I'm definitely not singing anything that will help us in our sense gratification. I don't know the language, but that's clear. So that's all the time. You see, just looking in the faces of materialistic people means, with that goes the whole, with the face goes the whole mentality of forgetfulness of Krishna. And inside also, our tendency, our latent, perverted tendency to consider that I am the body, I should enjoy this body. So without hearing regularly, Bidhyate Hridaya Granthis Chidyante Sarva Sanshaya, without the hearing to cut through this illusion and doubts, then we may be going through the emotions of serving Krishna, but it's not really there, because the mind is not there. The body is engaged, but the mind is not. Therefore, hearing from the proper source is important, and acting on that also. Service. Devotional service means acting on the platform of self-realization. Even if we're not on that platform, but we engage in devotional service, and that helps us to come to that platform. Otherwise we may say, oh, hearing. Well, alright, that's very important. I have to do a lot of reading. And we do a lot of reading, but because we didn't really catch the point that we're supposed to be serving, that we take it as a kind of academic study. We think that, well, I'll read so many things and I'll cram it all into my brain like the students in the college, and then I'll know. But it doesn't work like that. Knowledge is revealed within the heart to those who are favored by the Lord and His devotees for their sincere service attitude. So hearing has to go on, but that if from the beginning we have the idea that this, I'll just be a bookworm, it's not going to work. One has to be in a mood of service. So it's, we always emphasize, read, hear, study. But service has to be there. The whole point is service. Reading in itself is one kind of service. If one reads for the sake, everything is for the sake of purification. Kayena manasa buddhya. What's the next line? Kevalai rindirai rapi yoginam. The yogis, they engage their mind, body, senses only for the sake of purification. Purification means to understand that I am the servant of Krishna and to engage in His service. So now the December Book Distribution Marathon is coming up. It's a great opportunity for service, very pleasing service to Srila Prabhupada. For our own spiritual advancement, what matters is if yasya prasadat bhagavat prasado yasya prasada nagati katopi. If Srila Prabhupada and all the acharyas are satisfied, then our spiritual life is clear. Whether or not we know 10 million shlokas, whether or not we're sannyasi, guru, brahmin, recognized, none of these things matter. Ultimately, what matters is if we're recognized by Guru and Krishna, or recognized by Guru, because if Guru recognized by Guru means recognized by Krishna. So this book distribution marathon is a great opportunity to please Srila Prabhupada, and in this way ourselves we become benefited by distributing this knowledge. Srila Prabhupada worked so hard, literally day and night, to distribute this knowledge, and he was very pleased when devotees dedicated themselves to distributing this knowledge. So the point is clear. It's not a difficult thing to understand. What is birth and death? For some people it's very difficult. In one of those books, maybe Science of Self-Realization, it was in Bhaktivedanta, and there was some conversation. Prabhupada was trying to make one man understand that you're not the body. He was giving the example of the car and the driver, and he just couldn't get it. Just so dull-headed. He couldn't get it. But at least for most of us, it would seem theoretically easy to understand. We're not the body. Theoretically. There's a lot of difference between theoretical and practical. But this knowledge needs to be distributed for the benefit of others. So it's a good opportunity. We can all take it. And it's not just a December marathon. It's a lifelong marathon. There's no relaxation. Prabhupada, he said, I want to die on the battlefield like Arjuna. He said, I'll go on preaching till the last minute, endeavoring to serve the mission to serve the order of his Gurudev, to preach Krishna consciousness. So you may think, well, then I'll die, then I'll get some rest. Sometimes you hear people say that, I'll die and I'll get some rest. Maybe I can go to Vaikuntha and find a snake to lie on. Go to sleep for a long time. Ananta Shayan. It's the name of the Lord. Ananta Shayan. He lies on Ananta. It can also mean an unlimited rest. But no resting. There's no resting. As you go to the spiritual world means there's more service. So, but that's not drudgery. You know what drudgery means? That means performing some service we don't like to do, and we're just doing it. We don't like to do it, but we just kind of accept it. Okay, I've got to do it. But Krishna conscious means that the bliss of serving Krishna, where in the spiritual world, kataganam natyam gamanam, walking is dancing, talking is singing, because everyone is so enthusiastic, so blissful by serving Krishna. And there's resting also, but that's also bliss. Krishna also resting. It's another phase of bliss. The point is that there's no holiday from devotional service. We may rest also if we're going out long hours in December marathon, but we usually rest by having a festival, which isn't much of a rest anyway. And then we go on with life, that's all. Hare Krishna. Is there any question?
I wanted to ask about this.
You can just ask. You don't have to say every time, I wanted to ask.
So sometimes devotees, when they go out distributing books, they are very much concerned about numbers. How many books? And some of those who are not the greatest, they become depressed because of doing not so well.
What should be our attitude? To think in terms of numbers or just do whatever we can? Well, we should think how to serve Krishna, and definitely if we distribute 100 books, that will be more in the service of Krishna than distributing one book. So we can think to distribute 100 books, but then we shouldn't be ourselves attached to that or think that I'm the doer. When Shravas Prabhu told Srila Prabhupada that we're trying to do 100 books every day, Prabhupada was very pleased. He was pleased with that. If he said, well, we're trying to do 10 books a day, maybe Prabhupada wouldn't have been as pleased, because he wanted these books to be distributed in great quantities. But at the same time, Prabhupada could become very pleased with, just like one of his disciples, she sent him a sweater that she had knitted, and Prabhupada was very pleased with that also. And so many things. Prabhupada is pleased with sincere service. So yeah, try to do. You should try to do more and more and more. But at the same time, understanding, I'm not the doer. If Krishna wants, he can make me an instrument in his service. And we should think that if I do more books than others, then that somehow or other Krishna is working through me. And if we do less than others, we should think it's because of my material contaminations. Yeah, we should try to do more, but at the same time not be attached, thinking I am the doer. Some people, because of their acquired nature or personality, they can distribute books more easily. They have an outgoing nature. It doesn't necessarily mean they're a more advanced devotee than someone else. The test will be in the long run. Someone may be very enthusiastic for 1 month, 1 year, 2 years. But we'll see if one remains enthusiastic throughout life. And even when someone does for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, and then we don't blame anyone. It's not that that guy is useless, you see. He's not sincere. Anyone who's trying to serve Krishna, we should appreciate that. Anything else? Hare Krishna.